Welcome to the Plum Club podcast. Today, we're excited to deep dive into the mesmerizing world of gemstones. Gemstones' variety and versatility is already well known. But today, we want to dig deeper into consumer views on jewelry and specifically what you as a retailer need to know to harness current gemstone trends to the fullest. The gemstone market has and is still experiencing steady growth. Studies project a 50% increase from 2023 to 2033, which equates to roughly $56 billion in sales. It's fair to say that gemstones are an important part of a well-rounded customer assortment. We have a gem of an episode, so let's dive in. My name is Anthony Murata. I'm Senior Vice President for Sales, Marketing, and Product Development at PAJ Prime Art & Jewel. PAJ is a family-run operation with over 40 years of industry experience. We handle thousands of daily orders and keep our finger on industry trends from retailers small to large. With me today is Kristen Shelley, Vice President of Product Development and Merchandising. Kristen's an integral part of our PAJ operation as an industry veteran with over 42 years of experience. Kristen's particularly passionate and knowledgeable about gemstones, and so we're very excited to have her here today with us. So please, let's welcome Kristen.
Thank you, Anthony, and thanks for that great introduction. Also appreciate what you did there with the gem of an episode. Gemstones are incredibly versatile and really enable consumers to express their different personalities, and I'm so excited this is our topic today.
Yes, gemstones have been popular for a while, and I think with everything moving online, it actually feels like a lot of things are changing.
Exactly. This is true for so many other industries. The rise of e-commerce platforms and social media has really transformed the business. Consumers see celebrities and influencers wearing different types of jewelry, different cuts of stones, so they get educated about options, what their meanings are, and the qualities available in these materials. So we can say consumers have really become a lot more aware and also more educated about the sheer array of gemstone options. The differences in the types of gemstone options and colors in various gemstones and the qualities available, even beyond what's typically found in traditional jewelry store cases. Consumers even understand more exotic gemstones like Pariba tourmalines, morganites, South Sea pearls, Tahitian pearls, and then are more educated on rubies, emeralds, and sapphires. This is all contributing to the growth of the gemstone market.
So I think it's fair to say that offering stones outside of the basic flavors is more important than ever. It seems like customers are becoming more adventuresome and seeking out gemstones beyond just the classic diamond and sapphire.
Yes, and it doesn't stop at pendants, necklaces, and earrings. Gemstones are becoming a way of differentiation in a crowded market. They're also increasingly popular for commitment and engagement rings. We've seen this trend validated by celebrity engagements that show gemstones as center stone options. Jennifer Lopez's green diamond, Megan Fox's emerald ring, Ariana Grande's ring with a pearl, or Katy Perry's ruby ring. This is just to name a few. Many gemstone bridal options also offer a larger center stone with diamond accents. The colorful pieces allow for more self-expression using color and rare gemstones and can also come at a more affordable prices.
Kristen, you mentioned engagement and commitment rings. I'm just curious, for our audience, could you tell us a little bit more about what is a commitment ring and how are they relevant?
Sure. Engagement rings is obviously still a very large segment today. But in today's environment, there are different options outside of the traditional model. Some couples, same sex or opposite sex, often opt for commitment outside of the traditional marriage and still want to express their bond to each other with a special piece of jewelry. This is a segment that wasn't necessarily there before. The LGBTQ plus community is a big part of the commitment ring segment. And with over $1 trillion in combined spending power across various categories, it's an extremely influential consumer segment. They tend to show loyalty to companies that support their community and have strong inclination towards accessory and jewelry. This community's influence and spending power is essential.
Thanks for explaining that, Kristen. It really seems like new customer segments are opening up for the gemstone market just in general. Outside of commitment and engagement rings, are there other customer segments that you think we should be highlighting?
Absolutely. We should also highlight the millennial and also the male demographic here. I'll go into a little bit more of detail on each of these categories. Millennials today are willing to wait a bit longer to purchase an item of value in karat gold and genuine stone. which increases AURs in volume and dollars, over looking for necessarily price-pointed items and materials of lesser value. While traditionally Gen X is the group that has and is spending most on jewelry, the millennials have been emerging as a valuable consumer group for gemstones for a while now. I also mentioned men as a growing category. Jewelry for men is becoming more popular, and there are a lot of examples to look to. Harry Styles and the baseball players wearing a lot of extravagant jewelry. That goes beyond the traditional chain, as baseball players are increasingly seen wearing pearl jewelry, like we saw in the World Series, and that skyrocketed the demand for pearl pieces that can be worn by both men and women. This is a continually growing category.
That's definitely true. We've seen the trend in men's jewelry in our own experience as well. We launched a men's jewelry collection at JCK in 2023 called Ethos, and it quickly gathered some pretty immediate growth as an underserved category. And I think to date, we've had over 50 retailers carrying the brand and have already seen some reorders placed. I think one thing to keep in mind when we're talking about men's jewelry is that pieces don't necessarily need to be branded for men or for women only. Along with men's jewelry, gender fluid jewelry is also another category to focus on, I think.
Absolutely. And that's a category that might be easily accessible to retailers. Gender fluid pieces are transitional items that can stand alone or be worn as layering items. These days, the lines between jewelry for women and jewelry for men is very blurry. We see Harry Styles wearing a teardrop earring, baseball players wearing pearls, or as an example, a couple of weeks ago, a heavily encrusted pave link chain. We see women wearing chunky chains. It doesn't matter if it's a man or woman. Some consumers prefer heavier, chunkier pieces, while others prefer more subtle pieces that can easily be layered to achieve a certain look depending on their personal style.
Okay, so we've talked about new customer segments opening up. Commitment and engagement rings, which are typically dominated by diamonds, the LGBTQ plus community, millennials, gender fluidity, and men as a customer segment. With new customer segments, is there any change in terms of demand? Not on the volume, but in the type of demand?
Gemstones really play well into the personalization trend. Birthstones are one option for off-the-rack personalization, and we see jewelry that was traditionally reserved for, say, diamonds to be modified and diversified with colorful stones, like engagement rings. You may think the diamond is the most dominant stone, but amethysts, rubies, emeralds, sapphires, garnets, and other stones are rising in popularity. Even some of the lesser-known stones, like alexandrites, various shades of tourmalines, black opals, etc., are becoming more in demand due to the awareness.
You know, Kristen, as we're talking about this, I know that we've seen a trend toward transparency and ethical sourcing, particularly in the diamond sector. Does that apply to gemstones?
Absolutely. It's incredibly important in all aspects of the jewelry industry in general. Responsible practices, traceability, and chain of custody is a strong focus for the entire industry. Knowing the path from mine to market is available on many stone options is growing at a fast rate. Knowing the origin of a gemstone and any issues possibly related to some materials is key in helping consumers feel good about purchasing from a knowledgeable source that communicates their values in responsible and ethical sourcing. It is something that consumers are more aware of today, and it's becoming a key factor in deciding on a purchase. Lab-made gemstones are also a big consideration. Customers getting more and more educated about the option of lab-created diamonds, moissanite, but also created emerald, alexandrites, rubies, sapphires, etc. One thing to be mindful of, though, is to be transparent and be careful in the claims that you make. If you're unsure, it's better to not make any claims at all than to make a claim that can't be verified or validated. Once you lose your customer's trust, it's really hard to make a comeback. It's one thing to talk about the general ethical appeal, environmentally friendly nature of lab-grown gemstones. It's another to say ethically sourced or conflict-free.
Some really good points there, Kristen. We've definitely seen things like this in other industries. So as an example, for household cleaning products and food, those are some that come to mind. I also know that there's a term called greenwashing, which basically means that consumers believe the products that they're buying are more environmentally friendly than they actually are. It may not even be intentional, but it's becoming more of a thing because, as you said, consumers are starting to care a little bit more about being green. So without making any false promises, what can retailers say to their customers?
So mining and sourcing are on the minds of customers more than ever, relating to humanitarian issues, the value of the product, et cetera. So understanding the origin of the gemstones that you sell and the chain of custody of products is key in making the consumer feel confident in their purchase being a responsible and ethical choice.
That's great. I think to sum this up, consumers are more aware of the impact of their purchases now more than ever. And responsibility and ethical practices are becoming increasingly more important to them. And therefore, the transparency is really key here. So let's transition into how retailers can leverage what we've discussed so far. I think there's probably a lot to unpack.
Yes, absolutely. The first thing I recommend is merchandising things that you already have in your assortments. It really is all about packaging and framing the products you have and highlighting specific pieces of jewelry to speak to your customers. Really think about re-merchandising your current product assortment to highlight the trends that we just discussed. One example is men's pearls. Chances are you already are offering pearl strands and studs as basic. Highlight these in front of the store in a grouping to call out awareness and product availability for impulse purchases. If you already have a more male-focused section in your store, put this grouping closer to it so it becomes a consideration when shopping for men's jewelry. Alternatively, you can also show a string of pearls alongside a more typical piece of male jewelry, a chunky chain, maybe a cross. Make it very easy for your customers to see that you have products that fit into these trends and categories. Another example is to put gemstones in the bridal section. Customers might come in specifically for commitment or engagement jewelry only, so make sure they can see the variety of options in one place. Maybe they're looking for gemstones but not seeing it in the bridal, or they may not consider gemstone as an option until it's highlighted in some way. A few years ago, De Beers launched a gender-neutral collection called De Beers RVL. The collection goes beyond the simple chains, mixing metal and adding stonework. The thing is, you don't need to wait for a bespoke gender-fluid collection. You can re-merchandise what you already have to fit into these categories and offer options to your consumers.
Does this also extend into the online sales realm?
Absolutely. Merchandising is key and expands into your online presence as well. I think it's very important to have an online presence to start with. The e-commerce continues to grow every year at exponential rates, and new sales channels open up via your own online store, but also on social media. The online jewelry market is estimated to grow at a compound annual growth rate of 15.55% between 2022 and 2027. So that represents a growth of over $36 billion. That doesn't account for customers researching and pre-shopping online before going into a brick-and-mortar store for the final purchase. Most customers do their research online, and having an online presence will not only make your business more legitimate, it also gives you the opportunity to merchandise different collections and showcase your products. Same way that you can re-merchandise your existing inventory and in-store, you can do the same online. Create categories, for example, gemstone bridal, and also use a mix of male and female models to play more into the gender fluid segment. You could also think of a unisex category.
That's a good point. We're seeing this from fashion retailers too. H&M has a unisex shop available online. So they're featuring things like knit dresses, sweaters, and boots. And I know that Uniqlo also specifically highlights polo shirts and shorts as pieces that don't necessarily follow a gender classification.
Absolutely. And the underscore to all this is a really well-educated team. Your staff needs to be able to confidently talk with authority about treatments and processes, especially as we know that consumers are educating themselves more and more. Outside of the Federal Trade Commission's requirements for disclosure of irradiation treatments, et cetera, you can install a lot of confidence by talking about the safety of the product from residual radiation along with heat and oil treatments. Irradiated Morganite may have a beautiful peach color and come at a lower price point compared to a gemstone that naturally has the peach color. Understanding the trade-offs and gaining confidence in your knowledge and transparency will go a long way in making purchasing decision when it comes to natural and treated gemstones as well as lab created.
I think the three takeaways are really these. Number one, re-merchandise what you already have in order to suit particular gender trends, engagement, commitment rings, men's jewelry. Number two, to expand in the e-commerce space to merchandise and engage with customers in the online area. And then finally, number three, to position yourself as an authority in knowledge when it comes to gemstones. I think that these are some great takeaways that retailers can start implementing to harness their share of the growing gemstone segment. Kristen, I really want to thank you for sharing your knowledge with us today and shining a light on these consumer perceptions and perspectives.
Thank you so much, Anthony. It's been my pleasure. I really think there's a huge opportunity here and a really fun one as well, since gemstones are so versatile and allow for personal expression. This is definitely a trend I'm very excited about.